Hallo, willkommen zu diesem Vortrag, den wird der Lukas für uns halten. Er wird uns ein bisschen was erzählen über Coda-Dojos, wie man die aufbaut. Und ich würde einfach mal die Bühne für ihn freigeben. Wenn ihr Fragen habt, wird auch aufgezeichnet. Er wird die nochmal wiederholen. Viel Spaß.
As mentioned in the program, I will be speaking in English, because I know for a fact that at least one person here in the audience doesn't speak German. Kann hier jemand kein Englisch? Very good. Okay, so the rest of the talk will be in English. The first question you might ask yourself is, what is a Coda Dojo? For me, a Coda Dojo is mainly a room to learn. It is a room where you go and you can learn anything. A Coda Dojo, of course, has something to do with coding. You learn how to code something. But for us, for our dojo, this can mean a lot of things. It can mean electronics, it can mean encryption, it can mean a lot of things that have to do with computers. The Coda Dojo movement is a global thing. There are Coda Dojos all over the world. It started in Ireland, but now there are Coda Dojos in every continent. The mission of Coda Dojo is to teach young people to teach kids and slightly older kids to learn to code. The kids in the dojos are between 5 and 17 years old, but there are some dojos that also take even older kids into their and grown-ups into their program. But the original mission was to teach kids. Okay, so that's Coda Dojo. I'm Lucas. I work for a company called InnoQ, and I do programming stuff, like probably most of you. And that's all you need to know about me. There are a lot of Coda Dojos in Germany. Those are all the Coda Dojos I know in Germany. There might be more. This is why there's a dot, dot, dot at the end. Those Coda Dojos exist. Some exist just were founded this year. Some exist for many, many years. There's one Coda Dojo that I have the most experience with, and that's the Coda Dojo in Cologne, or Köln, because I'm organizing it. I'm organizing it for now about 2.5 years, so I can tell you basically anything about this particular dojo. But it's very important that not every Coda Dojo is the same thing. Every Coda Dojo has a lot of freedom how to do what they want to do. And in my opinion, you should, when you want to do a Coda Dojo, you have to find your passion and what you want to teach. If your passion is to teach everyone only JavaScript, then that's okay. That's a valid Coda Dojo. Every Coda Dojo is very, very different. Some meet every day, some meet every week, some meet every month, some meet only from time to time. And all that is still Coda Dojo. So about our dojo. Our dojo was founded by Ellie Wegner in 2013. But Ellie had a lot to do, so she said, I can't do this dojo any longer. So I took over the organization of this dojo in 2014. And since then, we are doing one dojo per month, with few exceptions. For example, this month. normally, we only skipped the December dojo, because Christmas it's hard to find enough mentors on shortly before Christmas, because of Christmas shopping and stuff like that. So we traditionally skip the December slot, but all the other ones, we still do them. Okay, so when you want to get started with your own Coda Dojo, I think there are four things you need. You need some goals for your dojo, what you want to do. You need coaches, you need a location or more, and you need kids to come to your dojo, because without that, it wouldn't be a lot of a Coda Dojo. So I will talk about how we did it. This is not the only way to do it, as I said, but you can take it as an inspiration. You can also disagree with me in the question and answer section later on and say, like, we want to do it like this, and I think this is a better way. We can also change our approach to it, because we are also open to adjust our dojo when there are better ideas to, coming in. So our main goal is to inspire kids to do programming and technology. It's not to teach them everything. It's mainly to inspire them, because in schools, a lot of kids are not inspired to get into technology. They only learn Excel and Word, and they are not inspired. They sit there and think, like, computers are pretty boring, and they also are brought to be just consumers of technology. They just use programs, but they don't create new things. They just use software. And we want to inspire them to do their own thing with computers, whatever that might be. That we have some kids that prefer to do the 3D modeling, and that's also cool. We want to support them in that. But they most of the time want to do games with those 3D models that they just created, and we try to help them as well, but we are not, all of us are 3D programmers, so it's not always super easy to help them, because they have very high demands. We also want each of them to have fun and to be creative, to create whatever they want to create, because that's one thing that we said just from the beginning. We don't have a curriculum that you have to go through, like in the first lesson you have to learn HTML and then JavaScript, and then we don't do that. We ask the kids, what do you want to do here? Because we think that this will inspire their creativity, and they often see what other kids are doing and say, I want to do that as well. And then in the next dojo, they have all their ideas, and most of them are a little bit out of our reach, and we try to scale it down a little bit try to get it done somehow. And one goal that we have is to replace ourselves. We want to replace ourselves with the kids from the first generation, so they should teach the next generation. This is a goal we have not reached yet. So let's see if we will ever reach it. Maybe I will still do this when I'm 80 years old, but that's okay as well. So another thing that you need are coaches, because without coaches, you can't teach the kids. You can also do that all on your own, but I think this will soon be a scaling problem. But how do you find coaches? I think you should look into user groups. If you are attending a user group regularly, that's very easy. Just give a lightning talk. I want to do a dojo. Who wants to teach? And there will be at least one person who wants to help. If you are not going to a user group, you should start going to user groups and get to know other people, because they really want to do that as well. You can also see that there are quite a few people here. There might be other people here who are also interested in doing a coder dojo. Another thing is, if you are working in a tech company, then you could ask your colleagues, do you want to do a coder dojo? Or if you are studying at university, you might ask the other people who are studying with you, do you want to help me? And I found this to be quite an easy process to find people who want to help. You have to get a lot of confidence into the people that if they say, I will come to the next dojo, that they will really come. This is the process that takes a little bit of time, because otherwise you don't know how many kids you can take into your dojo, because you don't know if there are 10 mentors say they will come, but only 5 come, so you have a problem now. This is what takes a little bit of time, but you will get to know which mentors come when they say they come. Another trick to find mentors is to ask people here. You are at a conference, there are a lot of programmers here. You might meet people that are from the city you are living in, and they might want to do this thing with you. So an excellent chance to do that would be in this room, or later at the socializing event. Maybe you meet people there who are interested.
Somehow moderated, because what now? Somebody should ask, okay, is somebody from Essen here?
I will repeat the question. The question was if I will moderate that and try to connect you, yes, at the end of the talk. I will do that. Then there's the question, how do I find a location? And first you think, this will be super hard. I don't have money to buy a room or something. But this is super simple. You go to your boss and you ask, can I use our office at Saturdays when nobody's working here? And the boss will say, yeah, of course. And then you have a room. This is at least true if you're not working in a big enterprise setting where there are security things going on. But if it's a smaller company, I'm confident that this will work. Another thing that a lot of dojos do is talking to schools. Schools are always interested in doing something with tech, but this is a little bit harder if you want to do it on a weekend, because schools are closed on the weekend, so you have to find someone who will open the school and close it again, and be responsible for everything that breaks. So this is not super simple. But I know a lot of a few dojos that do that, and they do that. It works quite well. Another way to do it is to go to a hackerspace or a makerspace, because they accept user groups and things like that. So they will probably also accept a coder dojo. There are a lot of different ways to do that. For me, it was really simple. Like, I asked my boss at the time, can I use it? And he's directly said yes, because he thought that it was a good cause to support that. And since then, we ask like other mentors, like, is your boss willing to let us work at do the dojo at your place? And this works quite well. Oh, and another one that I just came to my mind are libraries. Libraries are also very well equipped for this task, because a lot of libraries nowadays, they have a computer room or a makerspace room where they have 3D printers and stuff like that. And they love to get people into the library and do interactive things there and not just reading books. So this is also a good way to cooperate. We are doing this every year with the library in Cologne, and it works very well. It is just that we have to move the time slot around because of closing hours of the library and stuff like that, but you will figure it out. And then you have to find attendees. In our first dojos, we just ask the mentors to ask kids that they know if they want to come. So they said the big advantage that the mentors mainly talk to kids that they already knew. So they felt more confident for their first dojos when they were teaching. And from that point on, it was mainly word of mouth. So those kids said, I was at this cool dojo. Do you want to come with me to the next dojo? And then, maybe it was a mistake, I don't know. We gave two interviews at local radio stations about our dojo. And then the number of kids that wanted to come to our dojos exploded. So we had more kids wanting to come to our dojo than we could accept. So maybe that's not the best idea. If you have struggle with getting enough kids into your dojo, then it might be a good idea. You have to decide for yourself. But there was also a family-focused newspaper. It's called Kangaroo that accepts like events for families and events for kids into the catalog and presents them to families. And they also had a little snippet about us. And that also brought in a few kids that didn't know about the dojo. So at this point, at this point, we are over our capacity. So we have more kids who want to come to each dojo than we can handle. So this problem is now solved for us. But don't be frustrated when you start. When we started, we had, at most dojos, we had 3 kids. At some, we had only 2. But over time, this went up faster and faster. At one dojo, we had 25 kids. And this was a very, very interesting dojo, because we had to run around a lot. It was very loud in the room because everyone was so excited. Some dojos even run with far more people, like 50 people, 100 people. But that's not the kind of dojo that I want to run, because I want to have like a little bit of, like, I want to know everyone in the room and I want to see what everyone is doing. But if you like that kind of thing, you can try that as well. You had a question.
More an idea. I think there is a nice combination of location and finding kids if you go to a Jungian center or something like that.
Okay.
Because they are also interested to have technical offerings for their kids, and normally the staff is not able to.
Yeah, so the idea was to go to Jugendzentren and places for young people to do something in their free time, because then you have an automatic audience. I mean, repeating that, and you're looking at me like, huh, that's a good point, but it's what his point.
And a location,
right. This is a very good point, and I think that you can also reach kids that you would normally not reach. So this is a very good point. I agree. Yes. So what we do is, I will answer that in the next slide. Okay, our recipe for the Kodo Dojo is we meet once a month, and we meet on a Saturday. And we are meeting from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. on the normal dojos, when we have something special, something that sometimes this time changes. We decided for Saturday because if we do it in the evening, a lot of the coaches will say, I had a hard day, I don't want to do more programming now, I want to go to sleep. And then you have some people that skip the dojo on a quite close notice. A lot of kids also prefer that because they have to do homework or something in the evening. Saturday works really well for us. But some dojos also do it in the evening, but mostly they do a shorter dojo then because it's the evening in the work week. Our age group is from 5 to 15. But the core group is from 8 to 15. So the youngest attendant we had is 5 years old, and I will later show what she built on that day. We will probably go up with this number because we will not kick out the kids that are coming to our dojo for a long time. That doesn't make any sense. Meet at different offices. Started in the office where I worked, and then we started to go to other offices. We have one mentor for two kids. Normally, if some mentor is ill, then this might change a little bit. But we found that for people that are not teachers or trained people, it is very hard to manage three kids. It's super hard to manage four kids. Because the thing is that most of the kids that come there, they are very interested in learning. So if you are sitting there and you're answering the question of one of the kids, the other three are now bored. And this might be very, very straining for you if you have someone sitting there, hey, I have a question too, I have a question too. So we found this to be the best ratio. Sometimes we also do a one mentor, one kid thing, but as we are at the capacity, we mostly don't do that. This is also the trick for your question. How do we do the thing with the laptops? All our mentors bring one laptop. We have at least one notebook for two kids. Some kids bring their own laptop and they can use it too, but we don't want everyone to have a notebook because some people don't have a notebook, but some people can't afford a notebook. And we don't want to exclude them. Recommend that if the kids have a notebook at home, that they bring it, because it's easier to continue their work. Because if they work on the notebook of the mentor, and this is something local on the machine, they have to have a USB stick that they put somewhere, and then they have to get it running again, and it's much easier if they can just continue. But we don't want to enforce that. So a lot of the kids bring their own notebook, but not all of them. So the next topic is money. All Kodo dojos are free. If you want to go to a Kodo Dojo anywhere in the world, it's free. And mentors are not paid. None of the mentors are paid. The organizers are not paid. It's a foundation. The Kodo Dojo Foundation is a foundation. But this is for supporting like conferences. There is a Kodo Dojo conference and stuff like that. But the mentors are not paid and the kids do not pay for the dojo. So what we decided is if the kids don't pay and we don't give money to our mentors, we don't need money. Some other dojos do that differently. There are some dojos in Germany that created a Verein because they had the situation that the room sponsors wanted to have some entity that they can give money to and stuff like that. We never had this problem at all, so we don't do it. It creates more work. It creates the situation that you have money that you now need to spend. We don't want that. And we still don't want it, so we don't handle any money. The only thing we do is that from time to time, parents come to us and say, I think this is awesome, and we want to give you some money. Can we give you some money? And they give us €5 or something. And what we do with that is we do mentors dinners, where from time to time, we meet at a pizza place. We eat a pizza together. We discuss what can we do better, what can we do differently, and we just chat with each other, because we like each other and we like to talk to each other. But that's the only thing. They don't get any like Spendenquittung or something like that. They just want to give us some money, but we don't advertise for that because we don't want anyone to feel like obligated to give us money. We don't see that as a good thing. But some people just want to do that and we like pizza. Okay. Another thing that, yes.
Which system do you suggest to distribute the children on the mentors?
Which system do I suggest on distributing the mentors? The system is me. I stand in front and I ask, what do you want to do? And then I know what each of the mentors knows, and then I just send them there. That's my system. I think this will not scale to 50 mentors and 100 kids, but for our size, this works very well because if there is a new mentor, I will always ask them, like, do you prefer to do web programming or do you do something else? And sometimes I always challenge the mentors, like, you know Minecraft, right? You can do that. That's the system. Okay, the next thing, yes.
I thought, do you provide any food and or beverages on the events,
Do we provide beverages and or food or something? Most of the companies we work at, they provide drinks. Some of them want to have money for that, and some people throw in just a little bit more money so other people can also drink. So this works pretty well. But for food, we don't provide food, but some kids just bring something to eat. We thought about maybe asking them, like, you can bring cake or something to encourage them a bit more. But yeah, some mentors don't like it if you eat at their notebook. So, So one of the things that is very important for us is that we don't see our dojo as school. And we want this to be as far from school as possible. One of the things I already said is we want the kids to choose what they want to do. We don't force them to now learn Java or something. We want them to ask us, hey, I want to do a website. What do I need to learn for that? And we want to help them do that. Also, you can stop at any time as a kid. You can say, I don't want to do anything anymore. Then most of them start playing Minecraft, and at some point they come back. And that's okay, because it's Saturday, it's your free time, and if you want to play some Minecraft, that's totally okay. Also, the mentor can now concentrate on the other kid, so this sometimes also helps the mentors. So there's no schedule, there's no, like, you have to, now it's time to get back to the computer. We don't do that. But most of the kids are, it's more difficult to send them back home when the dojo is over, and this is not a huge problem. And some mentors also force breaks. So after 2 hours, they say like, let's do a little break and walk a little, because there's so much to do and so much excitement. So what can one do at a dojo? You can do a lot of different things at a dojo. Here are some examples that we are doing at our dojo, and there are infinite possibilities to do things at your dojo. One very cool thing is doing websites. Websites are something every kid knows, because everyone is on the internet all the time and sees websites. And this is something that a lot of kids ask on their first time when they come, like, I want to build a website. Or I want to build an app. That's also something some kids ask. But websites is still like one of the most popular things. This is an example of a homepage that one of the kids has built. It's very colorful. And all the colors are handpicked by the children. And one of the things that is really, really cool, like if a kid comes there for the first time and doesn't really know what to do, we ask them, like, what's your favorite website? And then we go into the web inspector, do a right click, and let the kid change the colors of the website. And you cannot imagine how much excitement this causes. Like, I go to the school website and now it's not that ugly anymore because it has much cooler colors. And then we have to tell them that they have only edited their local version and nobody else sees it. But they can still save it and show it to other people. So that's pretty cool. But a lot of kids want to create either a homepage or a page about something they're excited about. So this is the homepage of Leo. He's also in the audience. he has a web page where he also demonstrates, like, what have I done already and something. This is lab code. But I will show you a longer demo later on about one of the apps that is that you can see here. This is, for example, a page about the favorite books of one of the kids. And they also give ratings. If you click on one of the links, you will see a long description of the book, what is very exciting about the book. And this here is not very good to see. This is a website about the favorite game of one of the kids. It's called R something. It describes all the creatures in the game. I don't know this game, but it is apparently has a lot of information, because I clicked through it and there were a lot of subpages. This here is a page about animals. This was our youngest Coda Dojo attendee. I asked her, like, what do you want to do? And she said, I want to do a website about my favorite animals. And so we sat down and all we did was Googling for images and then putting it into the markup. And all that is required here is that you know what an H1 tag is and what an image tag is. And you can make a child very happy. This website is still up and is still shown to friends and families of this kid, because she's so excited about this this website. This is also one thing that I will come back to later, but you will never guess what will excite one kid. Like, every kid is excited about something entirely different. And some kid will see this and will be super happy. And it will ask you to put more seals on this page, because seals are so cute. And this page will grow and grow and grow and grow. This is a very simple way to bring someone into creating things, because you have created a collage of your favorite images. I know there's a copyright issue. Don't worry about it. It's a website from a kid. Who will sue a kid? Then one thing that is also pretty exciting is robots. We haven't done this in a while, because we used Mindstorms for that. I already forgot the name because it's so long ago. But the person who owned the Mindstorms is no longer in the dojo, so we don't have the Mindstorms anymore. We built robots that played soccer, and that was very exciting. the thing that was really cool about the robots was, because they are built using Lego, the kids that were very, very young and were not interested in programming, they could concentrate on building the coolest robot, and the other kids could concentrate on building the robot. So there was a dynamic in the group between the younger kids and the older kids. And there were also requirement engineering learnings there, because the other kids said, like, it needs some legs to walk. And the other kids were so excited that they built a crown or something. Yeah, robots. So another thing that we're doing at our dojo is electronics. Electronics mostly means some blinking lights. A lot of blinking lights, because blinking lights are the best. I will show you two short demonstrations. The first one here is the... Ampel? I don't know the word, sorry. So someone wants to cross the street and pressed on the button. Now it's green and it's red for the cars, and it will also go back and it will change. So now you can cross the street again. You can cross the street again, the cars can continue. This was a project that they also continued in the dojo up in the next dojo, and made it even more fancy with detection of your finger when you came next to it and light detection. It was very fancy, but it's not so easy to demonstrate on a video. Where's the other one? Oh, okay, I forgot the other one. Sorry. There was another one if you came close with the finger, then the lights would go bright, and if you moved the finger further away, it would change the color. This was also something that was continued in the next sessions. There are a lot of different ways to do this. Arduinos, Raspberry Pis, and one thing that is also really amazing, if you have kids at your dojo that do Scratch, Scratch can also control Arduinos. So you can do graphical programming of electronics. And this is something that the kids love, because some of the kids that come into our dojo, they also already know Scratch, and they can continue with that knowledge. Minecraft. Almost all kids in our dojo love Minecraft. Some hate it. So for a long time, we thought, like, we want to teach the kids to do programming in Minecraft, because they're excited about Minecraft and they want to do programming, so we should put that together. And for a long time, this was very hard, because the way to do Minecraft mods is to write Java code that interacts with not documented APIs, and it's not so cool. It's hard for someone who really knows how to program, so it's not the best way to introduce someone to programming. But something amazing happened, something called Scriptcraft. Scriptcraft is a way to program a tiny drone in your game using JavaScript. And as we already use JavaScript quite a lot at our dojo, this was a very nice way to do it. You just program a tiny drone that flies through the through the world, and that can place blocks, so you can build any kind of structures. And for a lot of kids, that was eye-opening, because they knew, like, I can do that myself, but now I can do it much faster, because I can let a robot do my work. So this is also something to learn for the future, when robots take all our jobs. So this is a lesson for life. This is something, if you want to know more about it, you can come to me later. It is really easy to get started, because the Scriptcraft website is very, very good. There's a tiny book for teaching kids how to program with this thing. So it's very cool. And one thing that we also are doing for some time is letting kids create their own game. Because a lot of kids love games, and some of our mentors also got into programming when they were kids by programming their first game. So this is something that works quite well. The difference between learning to program a game today and 30 years ago is that kids now know 3D games and stuff like that, but we have to lower the expectations for the beginning a little bit. So we do 2D games, they are still quite fun. So you can see here the basic principle. We have a tiny person that can collect stars. It normally is a little bit more fluid, but when screen recording it lags a little bit. But yeah, now we lost a life because we jumped on one of the bad people. We have a little tutorial that we just do with the kids, and they can program this game. They can then start changing things like how much gravity is in the game. And some kids can play with the gravity setting for 1 hour, no problem. They will change it to the highest thing and the lowest thing and say like, I can now fly, I can't fly anymore, and they will be happy. You can just let them change one value in one giant program and everything's fine. Some kids want to know more, some kids want to make it their own game. And there's one thing that one of our coaches came up with at our dojo, was the idea, hey, let's just let the kids create their own figures and their own textures for the game. And this is very, very simple. We let them draw it on paper, and then we take a phone and make snap it. Then we go into some program and cut it out, and then we have a figure. And this is something that excites the kids, because if they program the other game, they don't have this feeling of ownership. Because if they are the first time at the dojo, they don't understand that they created this game. They see a game, but they didn't have the control over what is in the game. But if they have all this, their own images in it, it's their own game. And this is something that works really well. And you can also have a very young kid, like 7 or 8 years old, that can't learn to program yet, but they can create their own textures, and they have their own game. And they will show it to all their friends and be excited. So one example here is a game. It's the same game. We only always use the same game. It's super simple, but some kids like to push up the number of stars. Some wanted to go up to 10,000, and one wanted to go up to 1,000,000, and the browser crashes. But this is moderate, I would say. But in this game, the figure is Yoda, and he fights Darth Vader, as in the original trilogy. I will just show a small thing. It works the same way. There's just much more stars, but you can still walk around and jump around. I stopped the video here because it crashed, but that's okay. But that's okay. Maybe. Yes, exactly. Okay, so these are some examples. We also have kids that do Android programming and other things. Those are mostly kids that already have like previous knowledge, and they use their mentors as a help desk. Like, they come and say like, I don't understand how I can make two things happen at once, and they now have to learn about concurrency. A very different approach. But I will show a short demo of one of the apps that Leo has built. This is a web application with a Node.js backend and a jQuery frontend, where you can manage your to-dos. You can or manage someone else's to-dos. What you can see here is this is one of the lists in the app. You can create multiple lists, and it's a very simple app. There's a very simple system. You can have every task either checked or unchecked, but you can switch between those two states. So now it's still to do, and now it's done, and you can switch between those. But you can also add more to-dos. So if you want to bring out the trash, you can choose this symbol here, create it, and you now have a bring out the trash to-do. And you can just change it, you can share it with other people, you can add other people to the list, and they can use it too. You can create new lists and switch to other lists, and you can delete to-dos. This is created with a tablet in mind, because the touch targets are big, so you can touch on it with your finger, because the main use case is a tablet. Yeah, this is one of the examples that we have built in the dojo. This has not happened in 4 hours. It happened over multiple dojos and it in follow-up sessions at home. So yeah, this is done by Leo. He's sitting over there. Yeah, that was a tiny demo. I could show you much more, but a lot of the things are on other people's computers, so I can't show you. So this is one of the things I could show you. So to round this up, some hints for mentors. The first rule is try to not type on the keyboard. This is true for mentoring kids. This is true for mentoring other people. Let people type on their own. You can tell them, like, type this or add a semicolon here, but don't type, because this, if they type for themselves, they have created the software. Also, they will learn much more because they will stay much more focused. If you just sit there and type and type and type and type and type, some kids will just like, I will not pay attention to this person anymore. Just don't type. It's okay to skip details. If you're working with an 8-year-old and you're programming their first game, they will not understand what a function is or if you can pass a function to another function, and they will not care. Skip over the details. Concentrate on the things that are exciting to this kid. This is some kids will ask for every single detail, then answer those questions. But it's okay to skip things. The main motivation is to get them motivated, to inspire them. If they want to learn in depth, they have to learn more on their own later on. But you want to inspire them and you want to answer their questions. But don't go into deep philosophical things about testing or something. It's nobody cares. Like, this will not go into production or something. Yeah. Okay, maybe. Another thing, a pet peeve of mine, never say something is easy. Nothing is easy. Like, programming is hard. If you are doing programming for a long time, you might think this is easy. Like, everyone understands what an if is. But it's not easy. If you're doing it for the first time, it's hard. And if someone tells you it's easy, all you do is tell them they are stupid because they haven't understood it yet. You want to tell them, don't be scared. But this is something different. If you say it's easy, you just tell them, like, why don't you understand this? So please don't tell them it's easy. Just tell them, like, let me explain it to you again, or don't be scared of this, or let's go through this at a slower pace. And as I said before, you never know what excites a kid. I would not have expected that some kids play around with gravity settings for 1 hour. I would have not expected that, but it happens. And that's cool. If they are excited about that, that's super cool. Don't assume that because you think something is cool, that this is something that the kid finds cool. Because if you're super excited about functional programming, maybe the kid is not, because they want to get shit done. So, yeah, please keep that in mind. And finally, I wanted to say some thanks. I want to thank Ellie for starting the dojo. She asked me in the beginning, like, do you want to join this thing? And I never heard of Coder Dojo before. And I was super excited for my first three dojos to teach kids. And without her, I would not have done this dojo. So thank you to Ellie, who is not here, but still thank you. Then thank you to all the mentors, because without the mentors, this wouldn't work. We have now about 15 mentors, and yeah, at most dojos we have 8 mentors there, and I think that's super amazing, because they give their Saturdays to teach kids, and I'm happy to have all of them, and each of them is amazing. Then to all the companies that let us use their rooms, that's super cool, and yeah, and of course to all the kids, because without them it wouldn't be so much fun. So this is the end of my talk. We can have a little discussion now. Yeah, thank you for coming. Yeah, we'll go into discussion now. Okay, we will start with questions, and then I will continue with asking who wants to start a dojo to connect people. Yes.
Okay, what are the shortcuts? Is there anything about budgets, about location, basis, or maybe some other organizations you can join? What are the real problems?
Okay. I'm not sure if I understand the shortcuts to do to what? To do what?
To make this stable.
Okay, so the main trick to make a dojo continue is to always try to find some rhythm in your dojo. If you say we do an occasional dojo, then nobody can depend on it. So the mentors know we do it once a month, and the kids know we do it once a month, and there's an expectation there. And to get more, to find a good day, we don't say like it's the second Saturday a month, but we do a doodle thing to ask which Saturday most of the mentors have time, and try to do that as early as possible, which is not always the case. We try to have as many mentors at the dojo as possible. Does that answer your question?
Okay, I want to offer you a cooperation with Sportvereine, so with clubs.
Mm-hmm.
They have regular trainings every day or every 2 days in a week, so we could combine this.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of kids ask us, okay, I want to code, I have to learn it, I want it, and so on.
Uh-huh.
They start, of course, with a website. They want to have their own website. And the other thing is that we say, okay, you can start with this. And we made this with the Python camp.
Uh-huh.
And this was just one time. So in March, one time per year. But we decided to do this also in the, yeah, not in the school, but at the Verein.
Oh, cool.
They know it. Yeah, they're familiar with this. And we get mentors there.
Mm-hmm.
And we make a project. It's called Integration durch Sport und Bildung. But we want to deliver also some coding, programming, and things like this.
This is a very good idea.
Fun, yeah.
I think that's a similar idea to asking Jugend clubs, because you just like go to a place where there are already kids, and if they are interested in it, I think that's a very good idea.
So we should talk later.
Yes.
Thanks.
There's a question over there. I think you have to use the microphone. Yeah. The rules.
I'm a mentor in Ghent, the Code Dojo in Ghent,
mm-hmm.
and we had the same issue with too many kids. That mm-hmm. at some point we had five times more kids than we could actually offer a room.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did was because it's the first come first serve basis. What we did actually was that parents who were also mentors could bring their kids. They were already enrolled, so that we have more mentors. And with more mentors, we could also offer more Code Dojos. So now we have two Code Dojos every month.
Wow.
And it's a bit different because you have one mentor for two kids. We often have five kids for one mentor.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we actually do is we try to have kids help each other.
Oh,
so
cool.
If they ask a question, they put up their hands. And we don't give them the answer. We give them hints, but we also, if we see that someone else already implemented it, a kid can explain sometimes it much better than we can, because we're too technical. We use words that they may not understand, and they will not tell you.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to, and that helps to have less mentors, but still you have to guide them, because they will, some kids don't, will not ask other children, so you still have to walk around and ask if someone is stuck. But that's one way to
cool.
be able
that's,
to
that's
do
a
more
very good idea.
Go to the gyms.
Thanks.
Another hint that we give to mentors in the same sense is that don't pretend that you know everything.
Mm.
It's often a relief for children that if they ask help and you don't know, you just point to some other mentor, even if you know you could do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could point to another kid that already has it implemented, because nobody knows everything. That's what we want to tell.
Yeah, what we also often do is that we just Google together for the solution, because
yeah.
we want them to know how to find solutions for questions.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the thing that I would like to say.
More questions or comments? Yeah, you can just continue.
Microphone. I'll keep it. Another thing that we do, and I assume that this was something that every Coder Dojo does, the last 20 minutes we have a demonstration. So we have a beamer, and everybody who has finished something can demonstrate to the other kids, and everybody applauds. It's by default. And we also try to motivate children to show off, because the children that come to these events, often they score higher in the autism spectrum. So that's why we want to have them talk about what they do and talk to other children. So that's something else.
We started that as well this year. I did not put it in the presentation. We had the problem that in both of the offices we were at this year, they don't have a beamer. So we had to do the demonstration a little bit more like chaotic. But I agree that it helps a lot, because on the one hand, it helps the kid that presents, because they will get recognition for what they did. But on the other hand, it's also inspiration for what you can do at the next dojo, because you already know there's someone there who can teach you how to do that. And this is something that works very well for us as well. We also tried an introduction thing where everyone says their name, but some kids really didn't like that. So we stopped it.
Yeah, I've got a question. If mentors bring their own laptop, do you recommend some kind of tool set that you should bring so kids can start, so easily can get started? Mm-hmm. Means they want to write their own website, they probably don't want to learn the VI first or something.
Yes, that's true. VI is probably not the best editor to get started. So we are doing two different things. One of the things we're doing is using the online IDE called Cloud9. It has the big advantage that if you are working on the computer of the mentor and the kid wants to continue their work at home, all you need to do is create a login, and they can just log in at home and they have the same thing again. They have the same environment, and they can continue on where they were. And we talked to the Cloud9 people. They were very surprised that we do that. There is a live preview function, and we just use that to host our applications there. So we just press play, and if the kid closes the editor, it will just continue working. So we have hosting, auto-hosting. The Cloud9 people said this will not always work, because at some point we will turn off the preview if it hasn't been used for a while, but it's fine. It's at least enough to show it to parents and their siblings and stuff like that. So that's a very good thing. The thing is only that if you are at an office where the Wi-Fi is not super stable, this will not be the best experience, because it needs a stable internet connection to work good. The other setup we are using is Atom, because Atom is for free. You can just install this text editor. It's easy to use, and if the kids want to improve it, they can install plugins later on. But we mostly just use like what the mentor likes, but mostly not Vim, not Emacs, and no IDEs. That's the thing. Yes.
Hi, I'm one of the organizers of the Munich Coder Dojo. Mm-hmm. And what we use is usually for the younger ones, we use the Lightbot, just for giving the idea how I can program. So it's a little game where you have to teach a little robot going through a labyrinth. And they go up to the point where they have things like, how does a function work? So the basic principles. And the other thing we use is Scratch, Lightbot.
Lightbot, okay,
cool. Scratch we use a lot, because you also can upload your code there and they can open it on any computer that they have. And what we also use is Code.org, where you can upload, build HTML, CSS, and JavaScript together to build a page and see how these three things work together. Cool. And I had a lot of other links where you can do things like that. So if you want to have a link list, I can give it to you.
Okay, I will now stop the question and answers and go to the part where I ask who wants to do something with a dojo but doesn't do it yet. You can raise your hand. Okay? Okay. So where are you from?
Bonn.
Perfect. There's a Code Dojo in Bonn. I can give you the contact data if you want.
Cologne.
I know someone. You should talk to me. Awesome. Okay. You?
Munich.
I know a guy. Yes.
Zurich. Switzerland.
Oh, okay. Zurich.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Sorry. I tried to parse it to a German city and I didn't manage to.
I think properly in English is Zurich.
Okay. That was not. Okay, anyone here from Zurich? Anyone know someone from Zurich? Sorry. But you can start one. You know now everything you need.
There's an official Code Dojo website where you might find a link to it.
Yes. There is zen. Yes? zen.codedojo.com is the website for searching Code Dojos. You can find one in there and contact them. They will probably love more mentors.
Let's see.
Okay, cool.
I'm curious to start something in Cologne.
Something? Ah, you wanted to steal my kids.
That's a big part.
No, let's talk later, of course. Cool. You?
Essen.
Essen? Someone here from Essen? But I think there is none in Essen yet, so you have to start it. Do it.
Wasn't Stefan from Essen?
Stefan who? I could maybe connect you with someone. Come to me after the talk, maybe we can... maybe he's from Essen, I don't know. Maybe. Okay. So, that's it? Okay. Cool. Then thank you for coming, and I think the time is over now, right? Okay.